Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Real spoilers powered by ReviewSTL.com.
Warning, the following film discussion will ruin the ending of any movie you haven't seen. Example, Bruce Willis is dead at the end of The Sixth Sense. See how I ruined it for you? Just like that. Here are a few more.
Silent breed is people!
I am the father.
Get it?
Real spoilers. You've been warned.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 569. And of course, as we continue to live in a life post new releases, we mine the archives. In this week episode, since we do two a week, you're in for a treat. I put that in air quotes. Dan's not here to make his air quotes noise. But as we tackle Batman Returns.
And you wouldn't think that this would be on our list of, like, weird, not needed sequels, but it is.
Well, originally, I don't think the idea was to put this. I think when Tom and I first discussed doing this movie, it was a break from the not needed slash bad sequels.
and then you watched it again with adult eyes. And you,
yes,
and you came around.
Yes.
Here's the deal. Like, okay, Batman, I think everyone knows, my favorite superhero. I love Batman, you know, comics, movies, TV shows, animated series, number one. But I have never looked at this movie critically before.
Yeah.
And I didn't even try to, but I mean, I'm watching it and I'm paying closer attention. I've got to talk about it on the podcast. And it was a completely different experience. I've seen this movie countless times, and this time it just hit me completely different.
It's so crazy how different, same director, same cast, same writer, same everything, how different 89's Batman is to this.
It's because he's
like,
got,
it's a different franchise.
It's because he's got juice now. Right?
Yeah, yes.
And they wanted him. The first time they were like, well, we guess you can do this. And this time they wanted him back. They felt he was the key. And so they kind of lost the ability to be able to tell him no.
Well, yeah, he made him that much money and he came on board and he only did it with control over the script. So
right. So
that's the difference.
Yikes. Yikes.
So before we do all that, let's go around the virtual table and everyone can introduce themselves.
This is Joe.
This is Kevin.
And this is Tom. Quick shameless plugs. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure and subscribe so you never miss an episode. Of course, check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. The group is called the League of Show Sharers because some people are kind enough to share the episode every week. And the people who were kind enough to share it last week are, in no particular order, Laura Connolly Quiddick, Carl Clarkson, Griffin Fox Smith, Travis Tewitt, Brent Smith, who has been an ordained minister in an internet fashion, but now it says,
congratulations,
it says Reverend Brent Smith. So,
oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Very regal.
Yes.
Regal. I'm not sure a reverend is royal, but.
Well, I don't know. Some people think they do. They are.
So Chris Sanders, Chris Magic Man, Gabriel Lugo, Tammy Sherman Powers, Tom Comiskey, Julianne Jordan, Chris Williams, Librarian Cynthia, Aaron Marlowe, Lane Levanway, Ralph Tribble, Jason Weese, and Susan Carlson. So thank you very much for sharing the show. We greatly appreciate it. And of course, don't forget our Patreon, where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help out. And that is greatly appreciated. So with that behind us, I guess we will tackle Batman Returns.
I think Joe and I, first, before we get into the movie, though, we recently had a discussion on Twitter with people, and several people.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes.
Who say that Batman Returns is better than Batman 89. And both Joe and I, and this isn't the first time I've had this discussion with people, so I was familiar with it before, but
right.
I don't think Joe had, and he was shocked
no.
when all these people came in, and they just kept saying, yeah, Batman Returns is superior, Batman Returns is the best Batman ever, like, that statement is made. Like, all these people came out, and I grew up loving the movie, too, but never thinking it's better. But, you know, I never thought that 89 was an inferior movie. Like, I love that movie. I've gone back and watched that one more times than any of these.
89 is my second favorite Batman movie.
It's solid. And Joe...
After?
What's that?
After what? What's your first?
The Dark Knight.
Okay. Yeah, I would agree that Dark Knight is... That's the ultimate Batman movie thus far.
Yeah. Thus
and
far,
so,
yes.
And Joe, didn't you and I even go back and do an episode on Patreon for 89?
I think so. Yeah, I think we did.
So for Patreon listeners, you should be able to go back and find that, because all our stuff that we do, the specialty episodes, live on there. So anyway, the point is, we had this conversation online and all these people love it and say it's better and the best and all this stuff. And I just, after watching this movie again and watching it through the critical perspective, I just cannot fathom anyone thinking that. Like,
no.
That's insane to me.
I think, like, so watching this movie, and I honestly, like, I don't know that I've seen this movie since it came out, right? And
were you doing, I guess you weren't reviewing stuff in, what was this, 92?
Yeah, I would have been 22 when this movie came out. So,
okay.
Yeah. And so, actually, I would have been 21 because it came out in the summer. But,
okay.
But so, like, maybe I saw it on VHS, but. Like, it's not something I've revisited in any semblance of recent, right? And
yeah.
And I found myself in, like, two places on this movie. Like, I was enjoying it as a Tim Burton movie, but I was not enjoying it as a Batman movie.
Because it's not Batman's in this movie for probably half an hour.
Yeah, like, he is not in this
maybe.
Movie. And as I was watching it, I was messaging Kevin, and I was like, when does this become a Batman movie? I was like 45 minutes into it, and there'd been like one Batman scene. Like,
and he was in it, and that scene is like 5 minutes.
Yeah, and it was fairly short. And on top of it, they paid Michael Keaton like... $11 million, $11,000,000 to make this movie.
It's a hell of a payday.
And only because I think Burton was like, Michael Keaton or I'm out, which is also weird
yeah.
because Burton was on record for like not wanting to make a direct sequel to the first movie. So
what did he want to do?
He didn't want to make, like, and that's why, like, there was an original script where Vicki Vale is back and they're referencing things that happened in the first movie much more in depth than they do in this one. Other than the joke about Alfred letting Vicki Vale into the Batcave and then his little romantic speech about Vicki Vale, like, there's really no direct references to the first film. And
yeah, there's no Joker references, and she's the only one that's brought up,
right? And so that was like how he did not want to make a direct sequel. And I don't think, has he ever directed a sequel?
No.
Well, there's Edward Scissorhands 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Well, I get that Beetlejuice 2,
he tried to,
like, that was a thing at one point, and that's not a thing anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean,
or got traction again like 6 months ago that it was happening.
Yeah, he tried to get that off the ground like back in the day, like around the same time as this movie, and didn't. And but beyond that, like, he's had movies that have spawned sequels, but he has not typically helmed them.
No, that's
yeah,
true.
Yeah, that's interesting. No, I mean, he definitely isn't someone, I mean, he's an auteur, and he is someone that, you know, his movies have a certain style, and lately they've kind of gotten away from that. But you can tell, especially in the 80s, 90s, what a Tim Burton movie is. They have a right. look, and this movie, you know, this is a very Tim Burton-y movie.
Yes.
And I think upon reflection, when I think about why I loved this movie growing up, and aside from just Batman and loving the character of Batman, I think I fell in love with the visual style. Like, I've always been a fan of Burton. You know, as a kid, I watched Edward Scissorhands and Beetlejuice and Batman and this Batman Returns. And so I really like that style. So I was torn watching this because I'm going into this thinking, yeah, I love Batman Returns and it's great. Not as good as 89, but I love it. And I'm watching it. And I have such respect for the Stan Winston practical effects and the set yeah. design and the gorgeous imagery and the Tim Burton style, which I really like.
Yeah, there's very little CGI in this movie. There's only like two things, I think, that are CGI. Yeah.
Tiny little enhancements.
Yeah.
Well, what about the whole scene with him hanging off the building or her flying on the... You think that's just a green screen?
Yeah, I think so.
Well, yeah, getting stuck to the like the helicopter thing and
the helicopter thing yeah. and the shields on the Batmobile this time look CGI.
Oh, sure.
But
sure.
Other yeah. than that, I mean, I think, you know, the movies, I mean, it when they were making this movie, the Warner Brothers Studios, this film consumed over half of their lot. That's
man.
How many sets and how large the sets were. Like, I mean, it was, and it's really one of the last movies to be made in that style. Like, you really don't get those huge giant
true.
Sets anymore. And you can tell it's a set, but it also works okay because it's got the Burton Batman universe has always had a very otherworldly feel.
Yeah.
So even though it always felt a little fake, like, it worked in that regard.
Man, I was thinking of you from last week, Tom. That, I mean, when I was watching this movie and you were going off on Escape from LA for being a set, I'm looking at this and I'm like, well, you know, I love Tim Burton's style and everything, so I enjoyed it. But right. I'm like, this looks just as much of a set as anything, the zoo and all that. I mean, it looks like it's a soundstage. There's no doubt.
Absolutely, it does. But if you remember, my complaint about Escape from LA is that it was a sequel to a movie that did not look like that. Right. And so if
did they film the first Batman somewhere, or were those a bunch of sets too?
Those were sets.
I'm in Escape from LA is a sequel to a movie look like that. And so
gotcha. And so
Batman,
like,
didn't though.
No, it did.
No, I thought the first one looks, I mean,
no,
it does. But to me, Gotham City in 89 looks way more lived in. And I mean, something
that is
about
true.
It.
That is true. There's the 89 Gotham does look better than the 92 Gotham.
Like, the alleys and that main like center town and all that. Like, yeah, if you really want to like break it down, yes, you can tell certain things look like soundstage, but there are also many shots that, I mean, looked like they were outside. Like, they did a really good job of building that set, where these ones looked more contained. There was something about it to where you could tell more. I don't know if it was lighting. I don't know if it was not as dark, so you could
the
tell.
Fake, but, you know, snow.
Yeah, something about this movie, though, to me, looked way more enclosed than the first one. And so that's why I think, relative to your point, Tom, like, I feel like this one to one is more of a, you know, the same kind of a thing. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. And I don't think, I mean, I don't know what our age range is for our listeners, but if there's any younger listeners out there that didn't live through 89's Batman, you don't know, like, the cultural phenomenon
yeah.
that was Batman. Like, in 1989, like, it was, and it was, so we'd had superhero movies in the past, but they all looked very similar to their comic book counterparts. Christopher Reeve looks like he came off the page in 1978. This was a completely different look for this. This changed the look of Batman from here on out. Like, it's from 89 on, he started wearing the black suit. It's crazy how different this is and how not good this is. Like, I was sitting there with Leanne had never seen it, and I was just watching it, and she's just on the couch. And she would look up occasionally and just be like, what is going on in this movie? And I was like, let's not forget, there are Happy Meals attached to this movie.
Yeah.
Like, there are toys and kids stuff Like, this was supposed to be a kids movie. And you've...
You know, I just, real quick to that point, like, I've always just been like, bah, those parents and their, you know, whatever, like, they're just so touchy and they're whatever. And I'm watching this movie and I'm like, this is a kids movie? Like, for some reason now I watch it and I'm like, oh, I kind of get why people were a little upset about this.
I mean, well, especially, you know? I wouldn't let my daughter watch this.
Especially in 92, you know what I mean? Like, right. People are a little bit more desensitized now, but there are some pretty raunchy lines in this movie.
Oh, the Joker. Yeah. The Penguin is a creepo.
Oh, well, my God. I wrote down his lines.
There's the pussy I'm looking for. Like, yeah. Like,
yeah, right, right.
But also, he's just like, oh, yeah, being mayor is great. I can grope people now.
Like, which, you know.
Which is ridiculous. Who would ever elect a politician that openly admits to groping people?
Who would say it's okay, they want you to do it?
But, oh, it's like, you're right, though, the lines. But the Catwoman lines, even stuff she says, the sexually charged stuff, the Penguin lines.
I can let the Catwoman lines go because that's that character they're trying to portray, right? Like, she's so timid and so meek in the beginning. And when she gets pushed out a window and chewed on by cats, she has a transformation.
But
right?
She's still in a kids' movie, though, Joe. It doesn't matter what her character. I'm just saying,
you're
like,
totally
this,
right. You're
yeah,
totally
it's
right.
Not, it's not that the character. It's character problems. It's that they put these characters in a kids' comic book movie. Like, this is the point in time where, I mean, I'm not saying, of course, that only kids read comics. I mean, Tom read comics, and he was, what did you say, like 22 when this came out?
Yeah, I was 22 when this came out.
It's not like only kids read. But I'm just saying, like, the medium in general was, especially at this time, thought of as, you know, a kid's medium.
I will say in 92 the medium is starting to change.
Sure.
But like, but 89's Batman was kind of the catalyst that started bringing on some more adult
in mainstream culture. I mean, there had been
grown-up
targeted books prior to that, but in mainstream culture, that was when people were like, oh, not every comic book is necessarily for kids. But when a comic book wasn't for kids, they normally did things to scream from the mountaintops that it was not for kids, right?
Yeah.
Or the other way they would do it is, at least initially, is they would put it in a prestige format, which would make it cost, you know, $3.99, $4.99 an issue, which was a lot of money back then. So it pretty much guaranteed that, one, it skipped the news rack, and two, a kid's not probably going to drop $5 on one comic when he could go pick up, you know, he could get four regular comics for that amount of money. So
that's, yeah, like The Dark Knight Returns, it's not a typical, I hate this term, but there's no other term. It's not a typical floppy.
Right.
Like, it's the cover stock is a thicker stock.
It's like a card stock.
It's a different binding.
It's not stapled. It's glued, and it's squared off, and then the pages are thicker paper and glossier paper back when most comics were still on newsprint. And then you started to see comics switch from newsprint to a cheaper version of that glossy stock. There was still a difference between the prestige books and the regular ones.
DC has gone back to the newsprint.
Really?
In the last year. And actually I like it more. Like, it's not newsprint, it's not that thinner, but it's definitely a newsprint style page.
Interesting.
So it's got some texture to it, which I like.
Interesting.
But yeah, so like this, you know, we're sitting there watching it and yeah, the Penguin's got some ridiculous lines.
Well,
yeah.
the whole main problem with this movie that I had, again, like, I like the visuals, but the script is terrible.
It's awful.
It's not
like,
good, man.
It is just terrible, and I couldn't help but it was cringeworthy so often throughout the movie. And that's what I don't understand about these sequels to successful movies. Like, we've talked about this with The Sting 2, for example, if you go back a couple weeks, and it's like, you've taken the exact same movie, and this movie, obviously the plot isn't the same, but you're you know, in The Sting, they take a movie that has a very, you know, very good movie and a similar plot, and then they yuck it up, and they put really cheesy lines in there. And so many sequels, they end up having these really cheesy lines. Like, I don't understand. Or like how Escape from LA, even, like, I mean, I can admit, even though I like it, but it's like, you know, New York was less goofy and silly than LA ended up being. Like, why do they have to take a successful movie and turn it into a cheese fest? I don't understand the thought process, because the things that the character said, there were so many one-liners, there were so many weird out of character things that these you know, character said.
Oh, you mean like Batman killing people?
The right from the beginning. I mean,
he sets a dude on fire.
I forgot about the guy on fire.
That's I did too, because okay, what do I always say, Joe, when I reference this movie? What is the one thing I say?
Bomb in the pants.
Every time we talk about Batman Returns, I'm like, yeah, Batman Returns is solid, it's a good Batman movie, but he kills the person, bomb in the pants. So this movie, like, just to like get even, you know, just like, aha, I'll show you move, like in this first fight scene when these clowns start busting all over Gotham, there's a fire breather and he like breathes fire in the direction of the Batmobile. Batman's
not,
like, oh.
doesn't touch the Batmobile.
No, he
just
breathes
in the direction.
Yeah. And Batman's like, oh, okay, I installed this special ramp or utility that will spin my Batmobile 180 and the exhaust will set you on fire. If that guy is not dead, he is scarred for life, right? Just because
he's created his new villain already.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like there's a whole backstory. I imagine that in my head of this guy, like, I will get my revenge on Batman. Like, they're like, if he is not dead, he is burned and scarred for life. And like Batman, in my mind, the Batman that I know and love, he would incapacitate him in a way that does not set his body on fire. Like, yeah. why
this is Zack Snyder's inspiration for BVS.
But it's the same. It is
Zack
the same.
Snyder loves Batman Returns.
But it's the same concept, though, right? Like, you're taking a character and you've got a beloved character with a rich backstory and you know his character traits and what he believes in and all this. And then you do these things because, I don't know, they're quote unquote funny or goofy or entertaining.
Cool.
I don't know. It just blew my mind.
So again, Leanne's sitting there and she's just like, did he just kill that guy?
Yeah.
I was like, oh yeah. Yeah, he absolutely did. She's like, what is happening? I said, I don't know. I just feel like, you know, sometimes you can see a movie like, I'm just trying to think, anything produced by Joel Silver in like the late 80s. And you're just like, oh, they were coked out of their minds. That's what was going on. Like, they were just like, yeah, let's do that and do that. And let's do this. And it was just crazy pants. This one, I mean, it's 92. And we talk about all the time about how directors don't understand the character. And I don't think Tim Burton ever gave a crap about Batman.
Well,
didn't
he says
care about
it.
Batman.
Yeah, I mean, he's on
he
record.
Wanted to do the villains.
Yeah.
You know, like, he was all about those villains.
The villains and the visual style of Batman is what he cared about.
Yeah.
And that
Batman just happened to be in Gotham.
And that's what resonated, and that's what made these movies popular, too, is, I mean, there's nothing that looked like these movies.
No, that's very true.
And like now, you know, 20 something years on, 30, almost 30, like, and now very familiar with the work of Tim Burton. Like, you go back and look at this movie and you're just very much like, oh, it's just a Tim Burton movie. Like, now I get it. Like, it's not a Batman movie. It's a Tim Burton movie. And it makes a lot more sense in that context, and it works better in that context. But as a straight up Batman movie, it leaves something to be desired.
It's weird to see the progression of these movies, because I always did lump Batman and Returns together.
Right. Like, they're always one and the same. Same here.
And then they go crazy with Forever and Batman and Robin. But if you look at the progression of this, I think Forever is better than this.
I was just about to say the same thing. It's sacrilege. I feel almost embarrassed to say this, but I do think I enjoy Forever better than this movie, because Forever at least knows what it wants to be. Like, it wants to be a comic book movie. It wants to be silly and campy, and it's trying to appeal to more of the Batman 66 crowd and more of the older comics and do a kids movie. And it still is dark at times. And
it was trying to thread that needle, right? Like, it was.
Yeah.
Oh,
and
like,
I think it does thread that
without
needle.
Abandoning the stuff Tim Burton had created and still kind of keeping that look and that tone, but also still having like something for the people that remembered Batman 66. And I think that that it is definitely, like, now again watching these more as an adult and more of an educated film guy, like, it's definitely a reaction to this movie. And also something to point out, and not that this is the only way you should judge a film, but it also made a ton more money. Like, it made...
Did it really?
Yeah, like...
Forever made more money than Returns?
Returns is the second lowest of the grossing of the four. If you adjusted for inflation, my guess is it might even be the lowest.
Wow.
It made...
Man, like, that's interesting. I wonder what the hell happened.
It made, like, $266 million, where Batman and Robin made $238 million, so less than $20 million separating them. And then Batman Forever made $336 million. So
But I think it's all there, though, Joe. I think you can answer your own question, because, again, what we're seeing on screen, could you imagine the word of mouth on this movie from parents after seeing it? Like, this movie, if you were expecting to see Batman, especially, you know, I mean, because Batman 89 is tame by comparison to this movie.
Oh, yes, like, yes.
So if you're coming off Batman 66 and then Batman 89, which, yes, was darker but not as insane, and then you see this movie, like, your reaction as a parent would be like, WTF, what did I just take my kids to? And so, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's not going to have that word of mouth. And then when you think of Forever and how fun and goofy it is, while still maintaining a really dark gothic look to it, like, Batman and Robin goes wackadoo, but Batman Forever,
oh yeah,
like, is this transition to where it's like they ramp up the camp and the humor, but then they also have a really dark, like, Jim Carrey and Two-Face have a really dark imagery surrounding them. And so I think you get the best of both worlds with that one, where this, you get really cool imagery, but the characters don't make sense, and it's just really dark in a way that you don't need it to be. Like, again, like with Batman presumably killing people, you don't see them die, but us as adults now watch this and we're like, yeah, we know they're dead.
when he kicks the guy down the sewer thing with the bomb in his pants,
yeah,
and Leanne's watching it and she was like, I don't think he's coming back from that. I said, no, that's not a flesh wound. That's a your body's gone wound.
Yeah.
There's nothing left when you kick the guy down and shove a bomb down his pants.
So getting into this movie.
Let's dig into the movie. Maybe we don't have time to go beat by beat. Maybe we talk about just some of the bigger moments.
Yeah. So, you know, we're 3 years out from 89, and, you know, Batman has taken the Gotham by storm, and everybody knows that he exists at this point. There's the bat signal, which is the most ludicrous, that's the most ludicrous thing in this whole movie. So
what? Oh, be careful with what you say.
Yeah.
the Red Circle gang is attacking Gotham, and they're at, like, the tree lighting ceremony, and Commissioner Gordon tells some random cop to kick the signal on, and somehow Bruce Wayne, who was just chilling in a dark room, just waiting, not doing anything in particular, just waiting for the bat signal to go up, has these, I guess they're like reflective mirrors,
like mirrors to bounce the bat signal, and just in case
directly
they turn it on
into this room
while
they're like bat signal detectors. Like, it's like the bat signal goes up, and then I thought they were lights too. Maybe they are powered by it, but, like, there he has his own little lights that then turn and shine on him. First of all, I'm like, that's stupid. And second of all,
yeah, it's ridiculous.
I'm like, why is he just sitting there waiting? Like, his reaction to the bat signal coming on is really bad.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I guess I should go to work.
It's one of those things I complain about where it's like, I complained about this in The Sting, too, where they have the reveal that Terry Garr's character was, like kind of, like, going to be the lady that scams this other guy. And she enters the room and her hat's down, and then she, like, lifts up her head dramatically, and it's like, but it's like, that reveal isn't for anyone in the movie. It's only for the people watching the movie, right? Like, if you're not...
And he is the Batman. Like, right. What does he react? Like, what have you been doing in that dark room? You're waiting for literally that.
Yeah.
Like, right. You would just be like, oh,
he
there
be
it is.
Sprinting
I've been
to the Batcave.
Yeah.
Finally!
This intricate system only works if you're sitting in that room.
Yeah, God forbid he didn't have to take a poop.
Yeah.
And then he'd be like, oh, no, I missed it.
Oh, no. I'm sure that there's a little something that comes out of the toilet paper holder or another little bat signal. You know, the whole house is just
wired.
Oh,
yeah. Can we talk about the branding in this movie where, like, his little CD thing has a bat signal on it?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Like, he's like a DJ.
Yes,
but it's a CD, so that's right, not safe.
I have about 10 notes, and one of my 10 notes is he scratches a CD. Yeah,
that's not how that works.
That doesn't. CDs are digital.
Not a thing.
I hate to tell you, but that's now.
So he gets to Gotham, and he, you know, beats up the gang, and we're introduced to Michelle Pfeiffer, who, it's funny. So in our next episode, I was trying to figure out how old she was in Grease 2. So she's 21. In Grease 2. She's
okay,
31 here. So these movies are 10 years apart. And I got it top five. Will be top five. like, I'll laminate that list. I don't care. Michelle Pfeiffer is gorgeous. And it's crazy. Like, even when they try to not make her gorgeous, they can't. Like, even when she's, like, the mousy Selena Kyle.
Yeah.
It's just like, no, I get it. Like, we could put you in an 80s teen comedy, and you could be the quote-unquote ugly girl that is all of a sudden not the ugly girl because she took her glasses off.
Right.
Like, that's Michelle Pfeiffer. And it's weird. The origin of Catwoman, well, I guess the origin that is done today is based on the Frank Miller Year One story, right? Like, she was a hooker. That Bruce Wayne had a run-in with before, like a pre-Batman Bruce Wayne. They have kind of like a throwdown in the streets, and she becomes like a cat burglar after that. Like, she gives up the sex worker life and becomes a cat burglar, and that's kind of her origin. She kind of goes from there. They're currently married in the comics, by the way, so that's a thing. But it's just like it's just an interesting take on that character, and the fact that it was going to spawn a sequel that never happened until 2004.
Is that when it came out?
Right?
Right. Yeah.
Like, that Halle Berry Catwoman was...
Explain it. What
do
you mean?
Halle Berry Catwoman was supposed to be Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
That whole thing was supposed to be... She was going to get her own movie, and it just... Michelle Pfeiffer, I think...
So it could have spawned scheduling. A sequel, you mean?
Yeah, sure, sorry.
I'm like, it didn't, because I'm like, what are you talking about?
Well, her origin's exactly the same.
That's why they added her... in the last shot of this movie, even though that's not actually her. But that's why they added Catwoman. They spent $250,000 to go back and shoot.
To get that one shot?
That one shot of Catwoman popping up at the end. Because they were like, oh, wait, we kind of left her dead. Let's not leave her dead. And and try and make another one. Even though Michelle Pfeiffer like hated that costume. She was literally vacuum sealed into that costume,
hold up.
Is easy to believe.
Yeah.
She went through 60 costumes during filming.
Yeah.
Different variations of a costume?
That, no. How do you wear through 60 of those?
I think what it is it vacuum seals, so it's so tight, and then there's no way to get it off without destroying it.
Oh, they have to cut it off verbatim.
That's my theory, because I don't think she was doing anything wrong to the costumes. I think that you know, that they when these people would design the costumes, they weren't all practical, because one of the other big innovations in the costumes from between Batman and Batman Returns is that Michael Keaton was like, I want a zipper in it this time, because he couldn't pee.
And so, sure.
And so they put a zipper in the crotch so he could pee.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. And so my guess is they didn't give much thought to hers either. And so, yeah, like they were, because the other thing is the costumes were, I read that she went through 60 of them, but they were like, each one was like $1,000, which doesn't sound,
my God,
that doesn't sound all that expensive on the set of a movie like Batman Returns.
I guess that's true. I guess that's true. I think Catwoman is a character, you know, like when they talk about spinning off the Gotham universe,
right?
Like Catwoman works like that, she could play in her own movie and that would work just fine. But I don't know if it was scheduling conflicts or what it was, but she never came back to that role. And I
just going back to that origin story, I hate this origin story. And
yeah,
you know, you've
good.
Talked about there's much better ones. I like her being a cat burglar. I like her in the animated series being an animal activist that, you know, things keep getting screwed over, so she's stealing money and doing crimes to support the animals and try to help them. Like, there are so many better origins. And this one, she's an administrative assistant / secretary. Ha ha ha. And she gets pushed out of a window. And somehow
for being too smart.
Yeah, but she's a secretary that gets pushed out of a window, and when she wakes up, she's one, crazy, and two, knows martial arts and gymnastics. Like, I don't understand how in any universe, even if like a comic book movie, whatever, I don't care. Like, it makes no sense.
No,
there's no like. No. I at least want a comic book. I don't care if like a toxic ooze spilled and you have superpowers. Fine, you know, it gave you powers, it morphed, whatever. But like, someone falling does not turn them like in any stretch like that. Just it, I don't know.
And then getting gnawed on by cats.
But then cats nibbled on her. Let's not forget that.
Yeah,
Oh, well. So she has rabies, case, is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Okay. She's rabid. Yeah, that makes way more sense.
She is totally rabid. Yeah. So then, of course, in the beginning of the movie, we have a strange cameo by a very recently busted Paul Rubens. Like, I feel like this is this is right after he got busted in the porn theater.
Oh, I don't remember. I love that casting, though.
I think it had been a few years.
Had it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Paul Rubens, and who I thought was Sandra Bernhard, is not Sandra Bernhard in this movie.
But this was definitely the first major thing he popped back up in.
And that's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah, and this, well, he had a really nice appearance at the MTV Music Awards as Pee Wee Herman right after it occurred.
Okay.
Where he pops up and he's like, it's just the lights go up at the MTV Music Awards and it's just Pee Wee Herman on stage by himself, and the crowd goes crazy, and then he just goes, and I can't do the Pee Wee Herman voice, I'm not going to try.
Yeah, it's
but
fine.
He's like, heard any good jokes lately? And then the crowd just goes absolutely crazy, and then that's pretty much it. But this is the first thing that
when was Buffy the Vampire Slayer, the movie?
I'm not sure.
Because, I mean, he's a supporting actor in that, for
yeah.
sure.
So, yeah, it was 91 when he got arrested. And this was definitely... this was definitely Tim Burton
doing his buddy a favor.
I mean, he owes his career to Pee Wee Herman, right?
Like, yes, and yeah. Absolutely.
And love that movie.
Yeah.
Pee Wee's Big Adventure is great.
Yeah. And then Buffy the Vampire Slayer was 92.
Okay. And, it's the same year.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. And then he was in Blow right around this time, too, wasn't he?
Oh.
Blow is 2000, I think, right?
Yeah, I was working at Blockbuster.
I mean, this is
so it's like 2000, 2001.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but anyway, I love that casting, and I love that in the TV show Gotham, he comes back as the Penguin's father. Like, that's brilliant casting.
As garbage as that show turned out to be.
But it didn't. It was garbage in the beginning and turned out to be better.
Okay.
It started off slow, but that's the problem is if you stuck with it, that show is pretty legit, especially for Batman fans. I mean, they go deep. There's a lot of deep cuts in there. Like, I mean, I don't know. I really appreciated it as the show went on, but that casting was great. But anyway, back to the movie proper. So
yeah,
the clowns attack the city and they basically lure Max Schreck, who Max Schreck, played by Christopher Walken.
Okay. Can we talk about his son just real quick?
I mean, you can, but it's got to be quick.
You know that he is doing, like, anytime Chip would talk.
Yeah, he talks just like Christopher Walken. Yeah.
The actor's doing the worst Christopher Walken impression I've ever heard.
Well, I mean, yeah, he's talking. Yeah. But,
at one point I was like, is he doing a Christopher Walken voice?
Well, yeah, that's
I was like he is. That's so stupid.
That actor played Zangief in Street Fighter the movie.
He also played Superman in like a fan film that I remember seeing. Oh,
that's funny.
But it's not good.
So the thing is, again, going back to Tim Burton's script changes, that character of Max Schreck was supposed to be Harvey Dent.
Yeah.
Wait.
So Tim Burton's like, no, you know, he's trying so far to steer away from a sequel. So they wanted to change it into this whole different plot. And then they were probably like, well, you can't do that with Harvey Dent. That's way too far off base.
They were going to have the Joker kidnap Harvey Dent? Or not the Joker, the Penguin?
No, this is a different plot.
It
was a different script.
And
Burton's like, no, we're going to go this crazy direction of this industrialist. We don't want this other subplot. And so they just changed the Max Schreck character doing the other thing. Or, I'm sorry, they changed Harvey Dent into Max Schreck and then made it this whole business type.
Got it.
You know.
And then at the
end, Catwoman was going to do something that turned him into Two-Face. I think like she does something to Max Schreck at the end.
She kisses him with the stun gun.
Yeah, that's what it was. The stun gun I think was gonna like turn him into Harvey Dent turn him into Two-Face, and so they had to like retool all that.
Loki, Harvey Dent, Two-Face is my favorite Batman villain.
Okay,
more than the Joker. I love that. I love that character. He's great.
So the clowns and all that, they corner Max Schreck. He goes into an alleyway, and they have a sewer grate that I guess they can control every sewer grate because he walks onto a random one. Like, how would they know he would do that? But okay, so he falls down into the sewer, and then this is where the penguin kind of... it's the first time, like, everyone's heard of this penguin creature, but no one's really ever seen him. And so he knows the stories, and he sees that he's got the... Isn't it the Red Triangle Gang? And this, it's not Circle.
Oh, it is the Red Triangle Gang. You're right.
He's got all these clowns, and they mention something about there's a story they bring up in this movie that there was Batman, I guess, and Alfred are sitting in the back.
Bruce is doing research on him and finds like a freak show.
A freak show, and they said that, oh, this guy disappeared before the police could question him. So the penguin is being set up as this underground, literally sewer crime boss with a circus freaks that came from that freak show. And so he explains this whole thing to Max Schreck, and that's how he gets Schreck on board, is that he basically... I guess blackmails him or whatever. He's like, I've got
he's got like a bag full of Max's.
Santa.
What does he say? He says, one man's trash is another man's treasure. So he's got like a thermos full of like nuclear sludge from one of Max's clean energy plants. He's got like a contracts or something about, I don't know, something that he taped back together. And then he's got the hand of Max Schreck's partner. Yeah. And, like, he pulls out a severed hand in a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, it's just more stuff on top of stuff where Leanne's like, what is going on? Why is he shaking hands with a severed hand? I said, I don't know.
Well, on top of that, another thing I questioned this movie was like, okay, because I'm like, what the hell does Max Schreck and his company do? Does he run a department store, or does he make power plants?
It's a legitimate question. One of my favorite nonsensical lines where he's like, this power plant will be my legacy.
My son. Yeah.
Bruce Wayne's like, what?
Yeah, like, no. Who is like, what a great power plant that guy.
Oh, my gosh. But in the history books, and the kids in class will be learning about the greatest creator of a power plant. Like, right. But no, it's just bonkers.
And the plan is even worse. Like, the plan is to take power from take energy from Gotham and then stockpile it.
You tell me this. How does Gotham have a surplus of power? If it has a surplus of power, then buddy, someone's already doing what you're doing.
It's got a surplus of power because nobody turns on lights.
But like, it's the stupidest, and that's what I'm saying. When you go back to the script, it's not just the one-liners, it's not the bad characterizations, it's the terrible plot and the terrible, like, the things that they're doing make no sense even by comic book standards. Like, this is getting into like Lex Luthor tax real estate schemes territory. So where you're just like, what the hell are you trying to do? And so it just it was every little bit of the script and plot of this movie, it just kept getting to me because it was nonsensical. None of it made sense.
No, none of it did. So, you know, basically, it turns out that the mayor won't go along with Max Schreck's plan. Bruce Wayne won't go along with Max Schreck's plan.
Of course not, so, because he's like, I'm a billionaire.
No, it's ridiculous.
And you would like to store power, because if it's somewhere, that means it's already stored. So you would like to store power from other stored places and call it a power plant? Like, tell me how you're going to make money from this again.
Also, let's not forget that they're having an election in December.
Yes.
But at least they address it, though.
They do address it.
The Penguin's line where he's like, don't elections happen in November? And this is late December. He's like, yeah. Don't worry about it. We got it. So Max decides to back the Penguin as mayor of Gotham, which is a comic book element. Like, that's always been a thing, is that the Penguin has kind of been at the epicenter of a lot of crime, like with the Iceberg Lounge. He's kind of in the know all the time. He's a crime boss. But I think at one point he does... Maybe it's in an alternate... I don't know. But there is one comic where he is the mayor of Gotham.
Sure.
Well, and that happened on the TV show. On Batman 66, he runs for mayor.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
It happens a lot. I'm pretty sure he does it in Gotham, the TV show. Like, that's been a reoccurring, you know,
Oh, you know what? It was the Batman Earth 1. Like, that's what the Jeff Johns, Gary Frank graphic novel. And he's the reason the Waynes are dead in that book.
Mm.
Like, Thomas Wayne was going to run for mayor and... unseat and clean up God. It doesn't matter. So yeah, so now they're on a collision course with each other. The Catwoman ends up like joining the Penguin for some unknown reason. Like, I don't really know what her beef is with Batman. Like, she hasn't done anything to warrant Batman going after her, but she is adamant that the Penguin and Catwoman need to team up to take out Batman for some reason.
Like, I think there's a deleted scene. I really do, because when Bruce Wayne meets Selina at Max Schreck's office, and like
there's a moment where he looks at her,
where they both like kind of recognize each other, but they haven't met yet. As Batman and Catwoman, and like,
and he does have a line. He's like, "Oh, I thought I recognized. I thought I knew you. Maybe it's somebody else."
I feel like there was a scene where they met as Batman and Catwoman, and that was supposed to be some sort of like a spark of recognition. But they, for whatever reason, deleted that scene.
Interesting. You are right, though. I was like, well, we know that he can't mistake her for Vicky Vale. She looks nothing like Vicky Vale.
Right.
They're two totally different women.
The only thing they give us in this movie is that whenever she stops a crime in the alley after being recently anointed Catwoman, she stops a mugger in an alley with a woman, and she takes him out in a very bloody scene. Again, like her scratching his face and blood coming on.
Every time something happens, I looked at my wife and I was like, kids movie.
Yeah. So I was like, wow. But then the woman's like, thank you so much for saving me. And she's like, this is your fault. Like, you're always waiting around for Batman to save you. So apparently she's mad at Batman for making people wait for him to save them.
The problem with the whole Selina Kyle subplot, how she treats this woman in the alley who's being sexually assaulted, how she interacts with the answering machine, how she interacts with Max Schreck, how she behaves when she gets, it's the biggest problem ultimately is that this is what happens when horny nerd boys try to write feminists, and this is what they they're not trying to insult feminists. I really don't think so. I think they think they're writing this strong female character, and for the time, I guess they were.
Well, I think, but wasn't she kind of I mean, the whole Catwoman, hear me roar, all that stuff. Yeah. Like, wasn't that kind of a cultural thing?
I mean, I think they wanted to be. I mean, I don't think it ever really clicked. I don't feel like it did. Maybe I'm wrong, but like,
okay.
I think they wanted it to be, and I'm not saying it didn't resonate for some women in that way, but it really, at the end of the day, what makes it play so weird now is that, like, they're trying to present it as this feminist girl power moment, and it's just, it's really just kind of schizophrenic in terms of like, why is she mad at this woman who was about to get raped in an alley? Like,
Is she mad at Batman? Batman has done, like, I could see if like maybe he busted up a score, right? Like, she's going to make some big heist and he breaks it up, but she gets away. I could see her being, but they don't have an interaction until she blows up Schreck's department store.
Right.
And the interaction isn't even that big. She's like, hey, what's up? It's almost on the level of Batman v Superman, where he's just like, I thought she was with you. Like, it's almost the exact same interaction. Like, it's almost the exact same appearance, right? Like, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, the two male heroes are standing side by side.
Yeah. And this is the beginning of the too many characters.
Yes.
In a superhero movie. This is the start.
You know, I could even let this one go, right? Like, if you're saying that, you've got, you know, you're in Gotham, you've got the Penguin, you've got Catwoman.
Sure.
And if they're not working together, you know what I mean? Like, once we get to Batman Forever, then we're off the rails.
Batman Forever, it just goes wackadoodle with heroes and villains. But, like, this one is, like, I think by trying to do Penguin and Catwoman, they had too many balls to juggle, and they do it moderately okay for a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah.
But, like, then the next one, they're like, let's do more. You know,
here's Robin, and here's this.
Almost a Robin in this, right? Like, they...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish there would have been.
I will say, though, I think that Batman Forever balances the two villains much better than this movie. Like,
and again, haven't seen it since it came out, so I don't know.
But you've got Edward Nygma and his whole subplot that, you know, he works for Wayne Industries and then he turns into the Riddler, and then you have Two-Face, and you have, you know, he's already established, you don't need an origin story, and then they end up teaming up to take out Batman because they have that, like, I feel like that feels a whole, like a,
yeah,
you know, they have a single goal. And that works very well. Here, you have to get an origin story of Penguin. You have to explain who he is, yep, how he became. You have to do all that. You get an origin story for Catwoman, and a bad one at that. And so you're trying to juggle that. And to me, it just doesn't work as well. So, like, I don't know. I never thought that I'd be saying, I've always liked Forever, but I never thought I'd be saying it's better. But I'm telling you, man, I just...
I'm with you. I am right there with you. I am shocked. The recent development that I think Batman Forever is a better movie than Batman Returns,
yeah,
I was not prepared for.
It's bizarre. I don't know. Yeah, I would have never anticipated that. But anyway, so, yeah. So,
they start a relationship. Bruce and Selina kind of... I mean, and this has been... Bruce and Selina have circled each other for years in the comics. Like, and it became a big thing in the Jim Lee, Jeff Loeb, Hush was kind of the beginning of this
shipping.
The shipping of Batwoman or Batman and Catwoman, and it's carried over for since then. And that was 2004, I think, is when that comic came out, and they finally pulled the trigger. And got them married, and you know, now they have. And actually, I like their relation. I like them together. Like I think them together,
yeah,
works.
I really like it. I like it too. And I, again, going back to animated series, which I think is just the best Batman.
I guess that's true. They kind of they flirted around that, yeah, too, didn't they?
But I love the fact that you get a Bruce and Selina relationship, and you get a Batman and Catwoman relationship. I love the idea of those two things living separately and them not knowing.
Yeah,
and you know, I just think there's something really cool about that dynamic. And yeah, so
and I think they have good chemistry. I like Michael Keaton and Michelle Pfeiffer on screen together. Like, I think they work together very well. Sometimes you get, you know, like, I think sometimes you put people in movies that they're supposed to be couples and you're like, no, they're not. Like, yeah, they don't even like each other, you know?
I think it's
so
fine.
Like, they at least work.
It's just weird. I think the whole, I just think she's very, you know, I just think she's unstable and I don't understand her motivations, and it's just weird. That's the main thing.
And no, you're not wrong.
And speaking of love interest in a film not liking each other, we will see that in our next film.
Yeah. Oh, buddy.
Little teaser.
You ain't
there.
Kidding.
So basically the whole thing is just, you know, Oswald Cobblepot is, you know, the Penguin is running for mayor so he can push Shrek's agenda. Catwoman is going after Batman for God knows why. Penguin's trying to take out Batman because Batman wants to stop Cobblepot. He knows there's a connection with his research to the Triangle Gang and Penguin. So they're all running around circling each other. There's lots of bad stuff that happens. But, you know, in the end, Batman ends up getting the Penguin because the Penguin... Okay, well, backing up a second. So
yeah, you got to explain this.
Let's go to the second circus attack on Gotham City. So this is where we get Bomb Pants. This is where we get the Wilhelm scream.
Yeah.
So the clowns are once again attacking Gotham. Batman has parked his Batmobile, and this is where you get that CG shield that goes over it.
Yeah.
Somehow,
Did you have this toy?
I only had like the regular Batmobile. I don't think I had one with the shields that went up.
The shield, it didn't go up. It was a plastic cover.
Oh, you just
that you would put over, yeah, you set it over the Batmobile.
That's funny.
And it was the shields. That's what that was.
So the fact that underground sewer clowns can hack a Batmobile,
yeah,
I've got a problem with that. And then they can also rig it up to be controlled by a kid's 25-cent vibrating like car,
right,
that would be in front of a,
yes,
Kmart. They have,
correct,
wired that up in a trailer for Oswald Cobblepot to drive the Batmobile around, and then they make it look like Batman is running people over and killing, yeah, people around Gotham. And so this started making me think, like, this is the first time that I can remember, and I didn't even know it was this bad, but like the, you know, oh, Batman is bad, like they keep trying to frame Batman. And then,
yeah,
I feel,
and
like
I love how the people of Gotham immediately turn on him.
Yeah.
Just without it, don't question it. He's like, no, he's a bad guy now.
Yeah. And the only reason that all of this gets wrapped up like in a hurry, you've got all this leading up to them. They keep framing Batman, and then he is like video messaging Batman in the Batmobile while he's controlling him, and he basically gives up. He's like, ah, sucker, I'm going to make everyone, you know, think that you did this, and I'm in, and they're a bunch of suckers. And he records that message on the video screen, and that's what later he ends up playing on broadcast television, and he does the scratching of him saying, I'm going to play these fools or whatever, and
like a harp from hell.
Yeah, and that's basically the whole, that's the downfall of the entire plan, the entire movie. He has to retreat to the sewers, and you know, showdown.
Yeah, so then his plan is to kidnap the firstborn children of Gotham,
and we all know today that would not end someone's political career.
But yeah, then again, Batman, talking about getting dark, Joe, like you just said, he's like, well, you know what, I can't be the mayor, so I'm just gonna go murder every kid in town.
Every firstborn child in
there
Gotham.
Is
We're gonna
so
throw
much
the sludge.
There is so much biblical stuff in this movie. With the whole like murdering of the firstborn child, he gets set adrift on a river like Moses, and then it's 33 years later,
which is
how old Jesus was when he died. Like it's like there, it's I'm just like, what are we establishing here? Like,
yeah, it's very odd.
I will also say it's one of it might be the only Tim Burton movie where the weird outcasts are the villains.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's
true. I think
I think in 89, I mean, Batman is the outcast.
Right.
And the Joker, you know, like, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, the Joker is...
They're like two sides of the same coin. Like, we see that all the time.
Right.
But I mean, in any of his other movies, Edward Scissorhands, everybody thinks he's, because he's different and weird, that they don't like him and they don't trust him. And we're in this one, like, I mean, they basically throw away Penguin as a baby because he's weird looking and he eats a cat.
Right. I mean, you know, but, it's not so bad.
Yeah. But he stays a villain. Like, there's no redemption story. We're not supposed to secretly be rooting for him and judging the other people who don't like him. It's
right.
It's a little off brand for
it is. That's true. That's very true.
I wish they could have just made Penguin misguided, you know, instead of him being a villain and him controlling a gang of clowns and trying to murder people. Like, if they would have had Penguin be misunderstood and actually become mayor and think he's doing good. But honestly, like you said, he's just a villain and he's crazy. We find out that as soon as things don't work out for him, he just wants to kill all the kids in town. And it's
children of Gotham.
Like, he's like, yeah, I mean, because he's not just like, oh, yeah, we will kidnap them and ransom them. He's like, no, we will kidnap them and drown them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I do like even the one clown's like, oh, man.
Right. He's the voice of reason. Yeah. Fat
clown. That's a little tough. Yeah. Fat clown.
That's his name in the credits. So, yeah. He's Fat Clown.
Is it really?
Yeah.
That's hilarious. So Batman thwarts that plot and he gets the kids safe.
Oh, I love the note that he drops off.
I told Leanne, I was like, why did he draw his symbol and then write Batman on the bottom? Like, we know who it was. You could either have done the symbol or the name, either or.
Sorry.
But no, he decides to take his time and monogram it.
I think Bob Kane wrote that note. That's Bob Kane's handwriting.
It did look like his handwriting.
It's Bob Kane's letterhead. Yeah, that's why. Because when he used to do autographs, he carried that around. It was that letterhead. But still, like in the movie context, it's silly and weird.
Yes.
And then sorry, the kids will not be showing up. Signed Batman.
Right. So then the plot turns out that he's going to take all of his penguins and they're going to go to the Gotham Center and blow it up.
Got to give it to
with
him.
With his penguins.
You know, Stan Winston practical effects mixed with real penguins. They had real penguins on set for the entire production. They flew them in. You know, they chilled everything. They said that it got to be like over 100 degrees outside and they would cool down the studio to like 34 degrees for these penguins. I mean, the fact that they would do that and go to those lengths for their appearance in the background of this movie.
Yeah, they were because they were king penguins. Like, it was a very specific type of penguin they were looking for.
But, you know, that's one of those things, again, that, like, even though I think that this script is garbage and I really don't like this movie anymore, this is like with Escape to L.A., I really appreciate the practical effects. I appreciate the production value. Like, hats off to everyone that designed this movie, that you know, worked on the look of it. Because, again, it's a great-looking movie and it's great-looking effects. It's just garbage, you know, a garbage script.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch, but not to listen to.
Yeah. And also, yeah, oh man, you ain't because lying. I forgot it earlier, I would like to know why Batman's bat suit can stop bullets, but a sewing needle can go through his suit.
But he can also rip the mask off like it's putty.
Yeah. So yeah. These are all just questions I have.
And it's weird. I actually like this suit more than 89's bat suit.
Yeah.
Like, it just looks like it has a little bit more mobility.
It does have more mobility. It does. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I've decided that if they're going to, for Matt Reeves' Batman, if they don't set this in, like, the snow, I'm going to be pissed. Because I don't know why, but that aesthetic of Batman in the snow, more so than, like, rain, I think is very cool. I don't know. Maybe it's just, like, the contrast of colors to the, the white to the black of his suit.
I think it's that. Like, it's a lot more visually appealing. And it highlights the suit instead of hiding it. Like, rain tends to blur it, where the black and the white. Like, I loved the Christmas time look of this movie.
Oh, yeah.
I'm right there with you. I totally agree.
Well, let's not forget that Batman wears Air Jordans in this movie.
Yes, instead of boots. Yeah.
He wears black Jordans, and they just have, like, a shield on top of them.
Yes. That's definitely, like, Michael Keaton, like, I'm not wearing those damn boots.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not doing it.
I think a lot of it is about him being like, I was miserable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not doing that.
He said flat out he made this movie because he was trying to buy some real estate, and he didn't want to do it.
Well, I'm sure he got it.
And they were like, $11 million, and he's like, okay, you got me.
All right, you win.
Danny DeVito made the movie. I guess I read that he was in the press for a year, supposedly cast as the Penguin, he said, before anybody ever actually called him. And that he wasn't sure if he should take it, but he's really good friends with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And so if you remember, they worked together very early on in both their careers in One Flew of the Cuckoo's Nest. And then Danny DeVito, right before this movie, had directed Jack Nicholson in the movie Hoffa, right? So they're tight. And
that's a Danny DeVito movie?
Danny DeVito directed Hoffa. Yeah.
Man, I always thought that was Oliver Stone. But all right.
And so and Nicholson was like, "Oh, you want to take this role? You're going to make so much money." Like,
"Give me that Nicholson deal."
Yeah, he's like, "You got to take it for the money." Like, he's just too much to say no.
That's funny.
Oh, you know, before we wrap this up, though, like, just I had my notes I forgot to mention earlier when he's remote controlling the Batmobile, like, there's lines in here like, maybe this is a bad time to mention this, but my license is expired. Like, Penguin, you lived in the sewer last week. You don't have a driver's license. Like, they put lines in here to be funny, but they're stupid. Like, that's the example of the level of writing that went into this movie.
Or lack thereof.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, so they go to this Christmas ball, and this is where they get the reveal that they say, you know, Bruce and Selina say the same thing they said as Batman and Catwoman. They realize who they are. I do like the line where he kind of pulls her in close and she's like, does this mean we have to start fighting?
Yeah.
Like, that line kind of worked for me.
They both had a mother named Martha.
They did. Yeah, right.
The only good thing about this scene is that everyone's in costumes but them. That's a smart move.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that a lot.
I would agree.
So now all hell breaks loose. Turns out that there's a fight in the bottom of the Gotham Zoo, where Batman has to talk Catwoman out of killing Max, which, again, like, that makes sense. Like, even Leanne goes, why is she so mad at that guy? And I was like, well, he did knock her out of a window.
Oh,
like,
that's the
legit reason to be mad at somebody.
It's the most reasonable thing in this movie, for sure.
So Max, you know, shoots Catwoman. This is the, you know, she's counting down her lives as he's pumping bullets into her in a kid's movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just putting that back out there. And then, of course, she kisses him with the stun gun from earlier in the movie.
No, it's not the stun gun, Bruce, right? Doesn't she pull down electrical wires from? She grabs.
She holds on to the wire, and she's also got the stun gun.
Oh, okay, wow.
It's one big thing.
Okay.
The whole thing blows. You know, the whole place blows up. They can't find Selina. They find a charred zombie body of Max Schreck. Kids movie, Happy Meals, toys, all of that was attached to this movie. Bruce Wayne leaves. They see he thinks he sees Selina, like, jumping into the streets.
I thought he sees her cat.
He jumps. No, he sees her shadow.
Oh, okay.
And then he stops the car, jumps out, and then the cat kind of like rubs up against him.
Oh.
They Merry Christmas, Mr. Wayne from Alfred. And then the last reshot scene is the bat signal going up and then Catwoman's head popping up.
Yeah.
And that's how this movie ends. This, I cannot believe that I have flipped on this movie.
I'm with
Batman
you, man.
Forever, like, is a better movie than this.
It's crazy. I wouldn't have thought it ever. And I will say probably my favorite part of this movie, again, aesthetics aside and everything, but plot-wise and script-wise, the fact that Bruce calls out Alfred for letting Vicki Vale into the Batcave.
Yeah.
That's the best thing.
Twice.
That happens.
That is a great piece of fan service.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. And other than that, like, there's not a lot of redeeming qualities about this movie.
It's cool. Kind of cool that he gets to be funnier.
Yeah. But
Michael Keaton kind of gets to flex his comedic chops a
yeah.
little bit.
But I will say, I'm a big believer that you have to take a movie in a historical context of when it was released. And, like, and I was certainly disappointed in this movie when it came out. But I will also say that, like, you didn't get movies like this very often back then.
Yeah.
And to get a movie like this with so much money thrown at it to look this good with A-list actors in it, like, that was unusual. Like, now we are very spoiled for these kind of movies right now. And so it's like, when you watch this movie in real time, I don't know that, real time being 1992, I don't know that
your
reaction would be as negative as it is currently.
I agree with you. I think there's two sides of the coin. Like, yes, people were craving comic book movies. Like, they were desperate to get something. And these
right.
Burton movies delivered to them. And the first one's amazing and still holds up, though. This one, I think at the time, like you said, you'd be more forgiving because you were hoping for anything that would give you these characters and this type of action. But, you know, at the same time, while this movie may have been more acceptable at the time, it doesn't hold up.
It does not age well. No.
Well, I mean, so, well, to your point, Kevin, like, I'm just thinking about Overboard.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that movie at a time is very funny.
Yeah.
And it works. But when you look at it in 2020 eyes, that's kidnapping.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, that's
and sexual assault. Like, it's not okay.
It's weird how some movies that were considered so good, and then you can say, like, oh, they were a product of the time, but some movies are a product of the time and they work, and some movies are a product of the time and they don't. And I think this definitely falls into the latter character where it just doesn't hold up.
No.
And it's a shame because, you know, it's a movie that I really enjoyed and really cared about.
Yeah, I think this may have been the first one that I saw. My parents refused to take me to 89's Batman.
Yeah.
Because it looked too dark. And they're like, oh, no. Absolutely. Jack Nicholson? No way. Absolutely not. But I remember seeing for Returns in theaters and being like, yeah. And then watching it last night, I was like, oh, no.
Yeah.
It made me feel so old because, like, my parents refused to take me to 89 Batman because I was an adult and could drive myself.
No, you drive yourself to that movie,
yes,
Tom.
I did. I did. Well, I guess that's it for this one. Sorry if we destroyed your childhood.
Yeah.
Well,
sorry,
I guess,
man.
Let's go around the table and everyone can say where to find them.
This is Joe. You can follow me on the Twitter at Joey Butts, BUTTS21.
This is Kevin. Follow me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett.
And this is Tom. You can follow me on Twitter at Roger Kubert or on Facebook at Facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online, Facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Be sure and chime in when we post the episode and talk to let us know if you've revisited the movie and if you agree or think we're just super jaded. Because it could be either. It
yeah,
could
right.
be either or, yeah. right? So, and of course, our Patreon at patreon.com/realspoilers. So, coming up with the next one, we will tackle a movie that we went into thinking it was a misbegotten sequel. Kevin actually picked Batman Returns because he thought we were going to not dislike it.
That's a shame.
But so on the next one, we will continue our foray into the world of misbegotten sequels with Grease 2, another Michelle Pfeiffer pseudo classic. So thanks.
I mean, you know, there's some silver lining, I guess.
Yeah. So thanks for tuning in, and until next time, Memphis and Mumble make up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.